Ray asked, what's the attractive offer? I used a technique I used when I was in the government and had certain kinds of powers. Not minus 100K.
It's got to be something substantial.
Not minus 200K.
No, you're going in the wrong direction, and you're using the wrong medium of exchange, too.
Say a word and be done with it because
Why don't
we do that?
Just to say, you know,
board's views on the recommendation. I don't have, for some reason, I don't have
there's a mic open.
That.
There's a mic open.
So good morning, welcome. We're set up here in classroom arrangement, classroom setup. There's a tension between having enough room, and I know how tightly packed we are here, so that's a joke too early in the morning, versus a U-shaped setup. Diane tells me that we're going to operate in this format for the series of meetings, this one and all the other ones, that the board's going to be meeting with constituents this week, today. And we'll try the U-shaped in Toronto, and then we'll have some discussion about how to do things going forward. It's hard to get it exactly right. It's quite obvious that we could have used almost any format for the number of people who are here now, but it's early. People will trickle in, and we'll see how this goes. So apologies for the sight lines, but fortunately there's enough lighting so we can actually see each other. On behalf of the board, we're very pleased to be here, and we look forward to these interactions, which are intended to be contentful and pointed and direct. And we've had the benefit of a small amount of preparation of saying what things we're interested in hearing from you, and hearing what things, getting a list of things that you want to hear from us. Let me turn things over to Olivier for a brief word, and then in the interest of time, the list that we have from you about what you want to hear from us, I think we can respond to in a fairly compact way, and then we can focus on the bulk of our time on interacting with topics that I think are worthy of some discussion and depth back and forth. Olivier?
Thank you very much, Steve, and thank you for seeing us again at this ICANN meeting. It's a great interaction always that we have with you, and I hope that you will be able to take our input. With me on my left, I have Evan Nibovich, Carlton Samuels, Tijani Benjema, Jean-Jacques Subrena, and Titi Akinsami. Rinalia Rinalia Abdulrahim, sorry, I just had the wrong name in my head. They're members of the executive committee, plus Jean-Jacques, of course. And we look forward to the discussion with you. The three questions which we had, I'll quickly shift through them, were the first one, the board's views on the recommendation within the WHOIS-RT final report that the board should be more strategically involved in WHOIS. I'm not sure whether this is a short subject, actually, so if the board wishes to answer in writing, we would be very open to this. The second one is the board update on the INA reply for the proposal. So that's probably something which you can answer in 30 seconds or so. And the third one was the board's priorities for the new CEO. And I think that this past few days we've already seen the board's priorities, so that question is probably already answered.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I hadn't thought to introduce myself or others from the board who are here, but that's perhaps an oversight. So I'm Steve Crocker, chair of the board of directors. Rod Beckstrom, CEO, Akram Atala, COO, chief operating officer, and about to be CEO for an interim period. And who's that guy? Sebastian Bachelet. And the other board members are hiding in the front row and distributed throughout, and I see, hiding even further back. And we have Fadi Shahadi as well. Let me make an attempt at moving quickly through the questions from at large. What are the board's views on the recommendation within the WHOIS review team final report that the board should be more strategically involved in WHOIS? The easy answer that I can give you is that we have not yet begun to grapple with the recommendations in the WHOIS report. We have a process. The report has been received, published. There's public comments going on. One of the important process steps in handling this report and do the comparable, the parallel reports, is to do an independent assessment of the resources required and the operational considerations. If we were to accept the recommendations as written, what would it take to implement those? As I said, resources is one element. Where would that implementation take place? Who would be involved and so forth? So a feasibility and measurement, if you will. A separate and the obviously most important element of processing this report is the value judgments that are involved as to whether we do or don't accept, whether we want to put any kind of interpretation or detail into what we understand about the report. And I frankly, just speaking personally, have not yet sat down to read the final report and to think hard about each of the recommendations. We do know, I don't want to make any suggestion that we're dismissive of the report. We know the amount of hard work that's gone in. We know how important the subject matter is. We certainly know that that we ought to take these recommendations seriously and look hard for how to have a constructive, positive response. So but there is necessarily a tension between, no matter who it is, recommendations proffered, and then what that acceptance and evaluation process is. We are just at the in the early phase of that, and so that's what we have to say. I guess I should say that just as I read these words here, without having read the report. Having board more strategically involved in, and it doesn't matter what you put after that, has a sort of inherent limitation. The board is a very finite, limited set of people operating on a part-time basis. We of course are involved strategically in a series of things, but there's got to be emphasis on that strategically as opposed to getting in and making anything happen. So that's that. On the IANA reply to the proposal I guess that really should be for the request for proposal. What our proposal is, do I read that right, that it's update on the ICANN proposal to the IANA procurement, right, is the natural thing. The short answer is that the process closed the end of May. ICANN submitted a proposal, and we are waiting to hear. And there's nothing more that can be said because this is a U.S. government procurement, and it's their ball. So when we know more, you will know more. And it's hard to say whether that will be very shortly or whether it will take many more weeks. We share, all of us share the same sense of anticipation and, sort of holding our breath to see where we're at. And that is the maximum that can be said, I think, at this point. And then as Olivier has said, we've had the benefit of hearing from Fadi in a couple of settings, and I think you're getting your own sense of where our new CEO is likely to go and how he's going to get there.
Thank you very much, Steve. So I think we can now move over to the questions which were submitted by the board, and the first subject is the RAA negotiations. I don't know whether you wish to start on an explanation, or do we start immediately by our comments?
In the interest of time, I think jumping right in, and then for anybody who's uncertain about the context is likely to intuit them from the structure of things.
Evan Leibovich.
Hi there, and hi, Steve. I think one of the areas where we've been focusing our own attention in the RAA is on 3.7.8, which has to do with the enforcement and compliance component of things. We've had some concern about its enforceability. We've been talking to compliance staff and have noticed some difficulties in actually being able to complete the loop of taking something from investigation to voluntary compliance to whatever measures need to be taken after that. And some investigation from other members from within at large have indicated that the current wording of 378 makes it very difficult, in fact, to force compliance. And so we may actually be coming up with some draft wording for that. In terms of the RA, that's probably been our focus in terms of the enforceability of the ease with which, or at least the tools with which ICANN has to deal with breaches, non-financial breaches, but ones that are due to providing misinformation or other things like that. I'd say, at least from the work I've been doing with them, that has been near the top of the list.
Interesting. The RAA negotiations and the details of the contract are matters that the ICANN staff has been dealing with in depth. Rod or Akram, are you in a position to comment further about the enforcement cycle and the relationship of that to the contractual language and the negotiations?
I was just saying I don't have. I'd have to look into that. I don't have any in-depth knowledge of that specific provision in the question. Sam, maybe Sam from our legal team can respond.
Hi, this is Samantha Eisner from ICANN Legal. I was actually with the ALAC as we were talking with compliance this week about this very issue. As I stated there, we are aware of. The ALAC's concerns about the enforcement of 3.7.8. However, the contractual provision also is written in a way that our enforcement power, while we do enforce it, it's not clear that we have that it's as direct as the ALAC has interpreted it to be. And also what's clear is within the negotiations now, we actually have proposed language in the draft that was posted for public viewing to strengthen that provision and to give us some heightened enforcement powers on it So it's something we're aware of and we're trying to work on.
Thank you. Do you want to say more?
Carlton Samuels.
Thank you, Steve. Carlton Samuels, for the record. There was a concern that has been expressed by my colleagues about the present negotiations and whether or not, since it is the single most important contract for policy enforcement, it should be more open and probably subject to consensus type activities around it, and wanted to know whether or not you had a view that perhaps we should open the IRA negotiations to further to other groups. Thanks.
Thank you, Carlton. We also have a comment from Holly Reich.
Yep, the specifics of 3.7.8, and this is something I've already stated in the meeting with Samantha, the problem there is, we have actually read the new language, which does tighten up the enforceability, which actually makes reference to a specification in terms of what we mean by accuracy. But the term reasonableness is still there, and it's still a judgment call, and it still leaves an awful lot of what we call wiggle room for enforceability. So how is it that you actually say, when do you draw the line, and is a registrar allowed to say, well, I've taken all reasonable steps, there was no answer, bad luck, see you later, because reasonableness does not actually kind of close the loop in the way in which we like to think, unless we actually have some tests. Did you take these steps? Did you actually try really hard? And did you wind up with no answer? And then what are you going to do? Those are the sorts of things that we'd be asking in terms of making 3.7.8 mean something.
Thank you. Bertrand? Thank you.
For the sake of the discussion, and when you evoke wiggle room and concerns, there can be concerns in two directions. Either that the provision is leading to too strong a leverage from one side. It could be law enforcement abusing a provision, or on the other hand, wiggle room that is evasion of duties. Could you please clarify which side you are worried about, or both?
Evan will answer that.
Hi, Bertrand. As a matter of fact, in advance of the meeting with compliance, we had 9 specific cases of things that had appeared to have reached dead ends based on interpretations of the regulations as they now exist. So we had actually come forward with specific examples of how we saw 3.7.8 in its current form was being interpreted in a way that allowed something to either slip through the cracks or simply go unattended while staying to the letter of the law. And so that was the concern of ours. And in fact, we even have some concerns with the current proposed rewrite of 3.7.8, and we'll probably be submitting some suggested text of our own.
Thank you, Evan. Next, Alan. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. My comment is not on 3.7.8, so if you want to go ahead with that, you can. No? Okay.
Is there more on 3.7.8 or more generally on the RAA negotiations? Yes.
I always get a bit uneasy in these discussions because of the title that goes along with them, the RAA negotiations. Although I fully support collegiality and trying to come to agreement with on any issue, as the RAA is written, if I read it correctly, it's not a negotiation. ICANN has the right to, within certain bounds, essentially unilaterally put terms in that they need to properly manage the contracts. And that seems to be something which is never mentioned. Maybe it's just we're being nice people and we don't want to mention that we have this axe behind our back. But I'm not sure to what extent we feel we must agree with everything on the registrars that go into the RAA.
So this is peculiar to me in a couple of ways. One is Are you talking as an ALAC member, or are you talking as a registrar? Because it feels like that's the kind of thing that I would hear from a registrar, which would be a perfectly sensible thing for a registrar to say.
Maybe I'm not making myself clear then, because I don't think this is anything a registrar would say.
It's early in the morning, Alan.
Okay.
So maybe I didn't understand what you were trying to say.
According to the agreement, as I read it, but I haven't had anyone oppose me, and I have seen ICANN legal opinions that seem to say the same thing, new versions of the contract, which of course only kick in after 5 years, are set by ICANN, subject to board to appeal to the board and a number of other issues like that, but are not explicitly negotiated. Therefore, if ICANN needs a provision to be able to enforce the contract or needs a provision that it feels the world has changed, it seems to have the right to put it into that contract, even if the registrars don't agree. Now, although I fully understand that you need to consult with registrars to make sure you understand the implications of any change, and it would be much nicer to agree on everything, that's not a prerequisite of the contract changing. And yet, we always talk about it as if we cannot negotiate it, it can't happen. And that bothers me.
Is your point that we should be able to do more since we have the axe-wielding power, as you're suggesting, or are you focused on the fact that the word negotiation is a sort of misleading?
I'm not worried about the misleading part. I'm worried that perhaps ICANN has forgotten they do have that authority should we need to exercise it at the end of the process.
Now I get it, and now we're on the same side here. I, too, have been puzzled when I've asked questions about, what is it about this negotiation that puts us in a disadvantaged position of not being able to say, we really do believe this has to be done, and we can be very polite about it, but we can equally be very firm. I have to say that even though I've tried to ask that question more than once, where is the leverage that the registrars have? I'm going to turn to Rod here and ask for your perception of your understanding of in this negotiation process, because it's not a simple two-party contract with each side having something to bring to the table and something to give up. It's a very asymmetric. There's one of us. There's a bunch of them. Can you expand and elaborate on this?
Well, first thing I'll say is even if they outnumber our talented staff, I have very great confidence in the negotiation skills of our staff to try to work to find middle ground, which, of course, is not easy. I don't think it's even always easy for the registrars to agree on exactly where they want to be and to seek to incorporate other views that are held out there. I think we simply have to do our best. There are some very forceful potential options, but those also have to be viewed with serious, let's just say, contemplation of second-order effects. And I think that, therefore, the ICANN team is negotiating very hard and aggressively towards what they think would improve the contracts and incorporate quite a number of concerns, including particularly compliance issues and other concerns for law enforcement and other groups. Sam, is there anything you'd like to add to that? I mean, you're in the middle of all these discussions, which I am not, as the CEO, and I think she can provide more depth if that's of interest. Can we get a microphone to her, please? Oh, there it is. Thanks.
So, again, Samantha Eisner. We read the contract. We know what the terms are in it, and there
you may not be surprised to learn that there are differences of opinions between ICANN and the registrar community about the scope of what that right means within the renewal provision. I know the term that you're speaking about because there is actually is reference to a consensus policy process within it. And so it's not, it doesn't actually say that ICANN itself can just pop up with an agreement. There is a process that would have to be gone through. And that process itself, given the makeup of the GNSO, likely would require some registrar buy-in onto it. And it's really important for us in terms of having contracts that people abide by to have some buy-in into what those terms are. And so that's really, that's our first priority in these negotiations, to get to a point where we have an agreement that meets objectives of the community, but also meets the objectives of ICANN and the registrars, because it is their contract too. It's their business to come to a point where we're all able to meet the terms of it and enforce it. And, you know, are there other options that we would consider to see how we can move the model along if the negotiations are not proceeding? Clearly, that's work that's going on, and so we're taking advantage of all of our options.
Evan Nibovich.
Hi there. I guess I would respond to that simply by asking the board and staff to remember that simply because there is a contract negotiation with registrars, the multi-stakeholder model does not turn into a single stakeholder model. That there is a whole community that is entrusting the board and staff of ICANN to represent the global public interest in its dealing with this. We're counting on you, and you have the ability, if there's a disagreement, that there is not an impasse. This is still a regulatory, in effect, function that, again, the world is counting on you to assert and uphold the global public interest in these dealings. Thanks.
We have a bit of a queue. Alan, and then Bertrand, and then...
Just a couple of quick comments or rebuttals. I fully support the process of negotiating as the first effort. Regarding consensus policy and the GNSO buy-in, that's the subject of a very narrow part of the RAA, which does require agreement as a consensus policy and agreement under the multi-stakeholder model with the GNSO. The vast majority of the terms are contractual terms which are not subject to consensus policy if you read the agreement, which is similar to the registry's agreement. I want to make sure that there is a level of comfort in the board that if ICANN needs requirements which the registrars do not agree to, there is an option the board can take. And that's really the critical part of it. If that is not considered, then we have, in my mind, a real problem. When we were first talking a little while ago about having observers at the, you know, from other parties at these discussions, and what the registrar said, and I quote verbatim, "If there are other people there, we're not coming." My reaction to that was, okay, don't. It's not really legally a negotiation. Clearly, it's best for all parties if we can agree ahead of time, but it isn't the only option we have.
You're in charge.
Thank you, Steve. There's Bertrand first, and then Beau, and I think we'll close that subject after Beau.
As you know, it's a recurrent discussion on the registrar accreditation agreement. I'm fully in line with what both Ivan and Alan have said. I find it deeply troubling that because the agreement in the end has the form of a contract, it is supposed to be negotiated bilaterally. At best, it could be considered as the equivalent of terms of service that so many of us are actually signing without even reading, because we have no power to negotiate when we use any kind of service. The reality is that the registrar accreditation agreement is a registrar accreditation agreement. And we tend to forget that it is not a bilateral contract. It is an accreditation agreement, i.e., it is what is requested from actors to get the benefit of recognition. The benefit of recognition for registrars is that by one single agreement, they get access to all the registries there are, which has a tremendous value for registrars, because in the case of the opening up of the new GTLE program, if there is no accreditation, every single registrar will have to negotiate with every single 1,000 registry to be accepted. This agreement is extremely important for law enforcement agencies as well. It is a tool for them, because without this instrument, national law enforcement agencies would have almost no capacity to act against registrars that are in other jurisdictions. This is the core function of ICANN, to be a tool for the different communities. But we need to remember that the Registrar Accreditation Agreement sets the terms of service for being able to provide the service of registrars. At the same time, because there is a spirit of cooperation and benefit and discussion, the registrars, of course, have a tremendous say in discussing what should be in there. But the balance had been tilted a little bit, and on a personal basis, I'm not speaking on behalf of the board as a whole, on a personal basis, as I've said in previous meetings of ICANN, I've been distressed by the notion that this is a purely bilateral discussion, and we need to be behind staff, and I support the efforts that ALAC is doing in strengthening the position of staff, because staff does represent the community in that case. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bertrand. I think your point of view resonates with our community. Bo Brandler, and we'll close the subject after that.
Yeah, thank you, Bertrand. That was much appreciated to hear. My question is also about RAA, but a little bit less about the negotiation itself and more about, I suppose, the optics of the negotiations. It does concern us that no one in the public interest sector of the community is able to be present for the negotiations or comment on them or at least silently observe them. But it also does concern us when, for instance, the person who is currently the chair of the nominating committee of ICANN, who holds a pretty substantial position of power, is also one of the leaders of the RAA contract negotiating team. And I want to I've become a little bit concerned that the board is blind to how that looks to the outside. I don't think it looks very good. So my question is, are you aware of this and looking to mitigate these situations where it looks like insiders have a pretty firm track to get what they want?
Let me just respond very quickly to that. Yeah, we're keenly aware. It's a the subject has been discussed more than once and probably will be discussed again. There is always a balance between how kind of the external view, the optics and so forth, versus substance. It's obviously important to understand and pay attention to the optics, and equally important to not be governed entirely by that. But it's certainly the case that we have been very sensitive and concerned about that, and equally very concerned about quality and talent available. So I'll just leave it there. Happy to get into further discussion on that. But, yeah, we're very concerned about that. Your other point about who's in the room in the negotiations, I think, is an important point, and what is the charge or brief that our legal team carries into that room and who are they representing, I think is an absolutely vital concern.
Thank you very much, Steve, and certainly bearing in mind the recent conflict of interest issues, the optics are pretty strong at the moment. I think we'll move on to the next subject. Question from the board. Who is report? In particular, what aspect do you think should be subject to policy work within the GNSO versus left to staff to implement. And for this, I'll have Carlton Samuels.
Thank you, Olivia. Carlton Samuels for the record. In terms of the WHO's final report, you may have seen the ALAC statement that endorsed the report in full. We believe, and it has been an ALAC position even before the report, that one aspect is the privacy proxy conundrum. We feel that that should be subject to policy work within the GNSO. But certainly the other aspects of the report, the accuracy of the WHO's record and several other issues that were raised, including the timelines for implementation that the WHO's review team suggested, the ALAC is definitely in support of those. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Sorry, thank you, Carlton. Today, I don't know, I'm getting all names wrong, basically. It's the Tuesday name problem, isn't it? We are Tuesday, aren't we?
Yeah. All I can tell you is it gets worse.
Okay, right. Evan.
I just have a small quick addition, and note that it's possible through the past that At Large has been sending mixed messages to the board and staff about this, and I wanted to make sure that there was absolutely no ambiguity. We support the WHO's review team. We support the idea of having robust WHOIS and accountability and the ability for, in the case of bad actors, that people have a recourse. It doesn't mean everybody has to have direct access. There are privacy concerns. Those can be addressed, and in fact, they were addressed by the review team. But I want to make it absolutely unambiguously clear that within At Large, at least to my awareness, we are in full support. And if you've been receiving mixed messages, please understand that right now we are fully in support of what's going on.
Thank you very much for that. That message is completely clear. And then within that, the question of which pieces should be subjected to policy development process, I'm hearing you say just the question of proxy service, and everything else is an implementation detail, as it were. And then to be equally clear, at least I understand that message. What we do with that is in the future, because we're not yet in a position to speak to that. But thank you very much for a very clear position. So the last bullet here says budget and operations plan cycle. I have to confess I'm not sure I understand exactly what that means as a question. I didn't write that. Do any of us know what the question is that we're asking of ALEC? Shireen.
I suppose, I didn't write this as well, but being head of the Finance Committee, I'm going to have a go at this. The big question here, sorry? Chris wrote it, but he doesn't know what it is either.
Help him.
Yeah. So I got it. The clue was in the word cycle, wasn't in... Here's the big issue. It's really about, is there sufficient time for public comments and feedback before a decision is taken to approve the budget by the board? We're having a meeting tomorrow with the heads of the SOs and ACs to talk about the planning cycle, I think, and I'll be present in that meeting. So it's very important for next year. But let me just sort of flesh out a little bit the problem. The problem is the timing between approving the strategic plan and then approving the budget. So, and they go hand in hand. And traditionally, we post the strategic plan, we get comments on it, and then we approve it. And the approval of the strategic plan happens around about the January period. It is at that time that we immediately post the first framework of the budget. So you now have from January until June, right, which is about a 6 month period to get through the budget cycle instead of a 12-month period, which could start in July until the following, because there's the first 4 or 5 months almost waiting to get the strategic plan approved. So then we post the framework, we get comments back, and then we post a draft around about the May time frame, and then we ask for comments. Between May and the last public meeting of the year, there isn't much time to really have comments and reply and then get a proper feedback, and the community feels that they've been heard properly and got the feedback properly. So the time is squashed. And what we really need to do is find an alternative to starting the posting of the framework earlier. Okay, so it either has to be posted before the strategic plan is approved, that causes a problem, or let's get the strategic plan done quicker and earlier in the year. And so I haven't got the answer to this. We really need to improve that, because it's not correct that we squeeze all the comments of the public in the last three or 4 weeks before approval of the budget. It's too crammed, it's too jammed, it doesn't give time for the community to feel that they have been heard and that we've commented back on their comments properly. So I think that is the issue which we need to resolve, particularly next year, and improve that cycle.
Thank you very much, Shireen. And short of adding more months to the year, perhaps that could be an answer. But I'll let Tijani Benjamin deal with this. He's with our Finance and Budget Subcommittee.
Thank you. Thank you, Shireen, for this comment, because we were always arguing about this point, the time constraint. Over the last years, there was a big problem about feedback. We didn't have the finance department didn't have time to interact with us, since there is a very short time to make comments, to have the feedback, etc. But we are always arguing. But when things works better, we say that it is better, and the finance department made a lot of effort to be responsive and to try to interact with us. And every time we ask for a call or for a discussion, they are always responsive. I can say that we find that it is better those 2 years, better than before, because of the willing of people to make the interaction better. And I can say that for at large, for ALAC, we are a little bit satisfied by this matter, even if the time is very short. And the issue of approving the strategic plan earlier is one of the solutions that we discussed with the finance department.
Thank you, Tijani. So certainly better, but can do better, even better. We have Sébastien in the queue, and then Alan Greenberg. Sébastien Bachelet first.
Thank you. Yeah, je vais parler en français, si vous m'autorisez.
I'm going to speak in French, if you allow me, because since we have at large, and at large always has tools, interpretation tools that are available to all participants. I believe this question is similar to a broader question on comment periods that some can make, the role of individuals that they have in comments, within comments, and organizations such as RALO and ALAC. about the time they have to make comments. So you have to know that within the Public Participation Committee, this is a subject that we deal with. And after the attempts, the experiments for during the first 6 months of the year on comments with open period minimum period of for comments, answering these comments for 21 days. And at the same time, we have the following question relating to the timing of the budget. Everyone had to work very fast during the last weeks, and this is not good for us, neither for the inputs that you can submit, that the community could submit to the staff in charge of finance, and especially to our chief financial officer. And it's not good for the committee's work or for the financial committee's work, because at this, there comes a time when we need to finish, and sometimes everything is done a bit rapidly and there are many important issues that need to be discussed. So I think it is very important. This is a question that is being debated on the table, and we hope you will be able to help us. When I say we, it's not the board, but the community, so we can define a good process that help us to get good decisions. Thank you.
Thank you. Although I support the concept of lengthening the time frame and giving more time for each of the phases, it raises concerns. My history goes back 40-odd years in computers, and I remember a time when the typical life of a computer was a small fraction of the design time for a computer. As a result, when IBM or DEC announced the machine, they were already working on the next two or three versions of it. And therefore, if you found a problem with the current one, it won't be fixed in the next one. If you're lucky, it'll be fixed in the one after that, and more probably in the third generation later, because the designs are already cast in concrete. And I worry a little bit about, are we going to be able to be responsive to change? And our business these days does change. If we overlap these cycles and lengthen them, are we still going to be responsive to change and be able to do things quickly and not say we have to wait a year until it gets into the plan and then the budget? So it's just the counterbalance that we have to be careful about.
Thank you, Alan. Shireen, has this answered some of your questions? And Chris, of course, since you were the originator of the question.
Well, I think so. I think the point about this, if you wanted to do it in a sequential way, i.e. approve the strategic budget and then post approve the strategic plan and then post the operating budget, you need to accelerate the strategic plan cycle. And I don't see a reason why not to. I mean, we're talking about July, August, September, October, November, December, and January, almost 6 months to get the strategic plan approved. If there's a way of accelerating that, even by 6 weeks, it will make a heck of a difference. I'm not saying accelerated by half, but just 6 weeks, a month and a half. That 6 weeks is a valuable 6 weeks for response to comments, for getting feedback, and that's all we need to do. So we need to find a productivity improvement of 6 weeks in the strategic plan, and that will sort out the whole problem, in my view.
Isn't that under our control?
Yes, I mean, there is also public comments on the strategic plan, so yes, it should be.
Let's do it.
Thank you. I just wanted to add one small thing to the agenda, which we couldn't put on the agenda at the time when it was submitted because we weren't quite sure whether it was going to be complete or not, and that's the at-large and ALAC structural improvements, which I'm glad to announce are now complete thanks to the enormous amount of work that was provided by the at-large community, some of whom are in the room and some of whom are probably listening to us remotely or will read the transcript or listen to the recording. That work was led by Cheryl, and I just wanted just to have a round of applause for all of the work that was done by the community. And, of course, by our staff as well that has been working day and night to get this done. It's a long, several-year project. And I see Chris Despain having put his hand up. Since it's classroom style, you're allowed to speak, Chris. if the censors will allow it.
Am I on? Yes, sorry. Olivier, I'm conscious of one thing about the work that you guys have all done. Normally, in the old days when we had a board meeting on a Friday morning, we would probably have passed a resolution on Friday morning acknowledging the work that you've done and accepting your report, etc. I'm conscious that even if we do that at a telephone board meeting, it's not quite the same as having that done in the room in front of everybody. So I just wanted to say that we thank you, and it is very much appreciated. Thanks.
The absence of the Friday board meeting doesn't preclude us from making a public announcement in the open forum. I hope we remember and are organized enough to do that. And if not, somebody should remind us. We don't intend to lose that opportunity. And the thank yous and expression of appreciation will hopefully be to a much bigger audience than we would normally have on Friday morning. Well, there was, Sebastian, you had you had suggested there was something that was on another slide that was part of the agenda that was originally expected.
Yeah, I received a message from staff that there is another question then about batching. Then I can read the question if you wish,
because
I have it, but maybe somebody else have it. It's not from me.
We have it here now. Batching, what are your views on having a single batch? Do you believe there is anything approaching consensus, and what is the acceptable time frame in which to do a single batch? And if there is to be batching, do you believe that there is consensus on a method other than digital archery that should be used? Simple questions, short answers, please. Shireen? This is posed as a question from the board to ALAC, but go ahead.
I just wanted to make sure that was the other way around.
Yeah.
Cheryl Langdonor.
Thank you, Olivier. Cheryl Langdonor for the transcript record. I just wanted to make sure, and we don't have a consensus because we haven't called for a consensus, but we have had a number of conversations in a number of fora, and to give you an example, the 7 a.m. AP RALO meeting that was held this morning, a considerable amount of the agenda time was spent talking on this exact matter, but with the focus on what the at-large community and specifically the ALAC has supported in new GTLDs from the very outset, and that was our concern about IDNs being not in a batch that comes somewhere south of next week and the week after and the week after that. So the concept of single batching is probably something that I would suggest is likely to be very attractive. We are concerned about, in inverted commas, first mover advantage being in the more traditional used GTLD space and perhaps less likely to be applied to things like community and internationalised domain name ones. So whilst we can't give you a consensus answer, the feeling in the room, at least from Asia Pacific, would probably be in the affirmative to all of those. And digital archery, we have... I'm not sure that I could say there is no one who doesn't like it, but I've yet to find them, and when I do, they'll no longer exist.
Thank you, Cheryl. Yeah, definitely digital archery has not brought any consensus or any anything on target, put it this way. No pun intended. Evan Lubovich, quickly.
Hi. At least within the circles that I've been speaking, the feeling has been that particular issues about batching and any issues between applicants themselves are essentially between applicants. And in terms of at large, I don't think there is any preference to the process. But the issue is of ICANN's own reputation. And in digital archery, the various bumps and fits and starts that have happened have not been helpful to ICANN's outside image. And I think the main issue is not specifically which process is taken, but so much to have one that is seen to be competent and effective.
Thank you, Evan. And as you can see, no clear consensus, but several very interesting views from our community. Shireen?
Just a clarification. Cheryl, you said no one doesn't like it. That's what I wanted to make sure. No one does like it.
Yes, I'm sorry, Shireen. I should tell you it is Australian. It has to be. Edmund, you wanted to say a couple of words? Edmund Chong.
Thank you, Olivier. Edmund Chong here. Of course, most people know that IDNs is deep in my heart, but I'm not going to talk about that. One of the things about batching, I think... personally, of course, I want IDNs to go first, but that's not the point. I think one of the problems with the batching process, at least in my heart, is that this is a process, as far as I know, never went out to public comment. And I think that should, you know, that is the, this particular process created a product that, you know, I guess it wasn't liked by anyone. Well, not anyone. It wasn't liked by a lot of people. So I would encourage the board to consider putting it out for public comments for a short period of time, at least, to gather that information and then make the decision. I think that, you know, that's a process that would make it better. That's just, I guess, my personal opinion.
I like your short period of time. I have a feeling, given what I've been hearing in the halls, that if we open up the public comment period for just a short time, you know, 2 hours, we'd have a pretty good sample of what we need to know.
Thank you, Steve. Actually, it looks like we are going to have the 2 hours. Everyone suddenly putting their hand up. Alan and Evan, and then we close this. We have to finish this.
I, like many people, have had many, many discussions about that this week. It's interesting. There is no agreement on the right way to do it. There are some agreements on the wrong way to do it, and there are a number of subsets which most people agree to. I haven't heard many people disagree with the concept of should ICANN choose to handle IDNs first. Not many people would object. Community ones are more difficult because some of the people who ask for community TLDs are really not communities in our mind. The other one that I would favor going first is the contested ones. They're going to be elongated afterwards. Get the process started now, and that takes another big chunk out of the total number you have to address. And that may make the rest more manageable.
Thank you, Alan. Evan, 20-second closing words on batching.
And one idea that's been put around, if all else fails, is that we've been considering the budget of what it would cost for a very large jar and a bunch of jelly beans.
It's called a lottery, and yeah, that's the first thing that we wanted to do, and we're pushed back on very hard by legal opinions. He said that's just not consistent with the legal framework we're operating in. Can't do it. And I have to tell you that new people coming to the conversation who questioned, you know, like, well, have we really gotten competent opinion? Have we really tested it? Is it really necessary for those rules to apply to this situation? Can we go up the hierarchy in the legal system to find out if it would really be interpreted that way? All of those actually have been done multiple times by different people, and the results have all been quite consistent coming back. It's disappointing for those of us who would say that's the simplest and most straightforward, but it has been explored multiple times, multiple ways, not just a casual, quick response. And so we've had to live with that. Jelly beans or whatever.
Okay, well, thanks very much to everyone attending. And, of course, we have closing words from Rod Beckstrom, President and CEO of ICANN.
Thank you, Olivier. And I just want to thank all of you and congratulate you in the broad sweep of... I know that from this position, you know, as a CEO, I only get to see a little bit of the work in ALEC, not what goes on down inside those 144 structures around the world that you've built or within all the Rallos. But what I can say from my vantage point is I think that your work to bring voice to the issues and concerns of individual Internet users is absolutely invaluable to this multi-stakeholder model and development of policies and the improvement of our practices as an organization. And to see the progress, the growth in those structures around the world, reaching into new countries, also your creation of new fora, such as the Rallo showcases, which have really, I think, generated even more enthusiasm for what goes on within ALEC, drawn in more people, and educated more of the ICANN community that's not simply in ALEC. And as many of you probably know, I'm an ALEC member, and I will be an ALEC member after I leave on Sunday because I'm a member of San Francisco Bay ISOC chapter. But also I want to remark on the significant progress in your other activities, such as this year alone, I think 20 policy statements already, and many of those coordinated across all five regions. And we know that takes an enormous, enormous amount of work within your community to make that happen. So I'd just like everyone here on the board and staff to give a huge hand to everyone in ALEC, the committee members, the leadership, and all members around the world. Let's give them a hand. Thank you. And a thank you to our staff who work so tirelessly and diligently to support your group. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. Thank you, everyone. We, on behalf of the board, I can tell you that we look forward to these exchanges. As you know, we modified the format to actually, instead of just meet and greet and cocktails and various things like that, this format is very helpful in terms of getting into issues and having very direct dialogue. So it's much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Steve. Yesterday we celebrated the 10 years of the At-Large Advisory Committee, the ALEC. We invite you all in 10 years' time for the 20-year anniversary. Thank you.